You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.
DK, hi, good morning. My name is Christian Long, and I currently help lead DesignShare, a virtual group that explores research in the field of school design and looks specifically at how the future of learning is evolving and what the impact is for architects, technology experts, educators, politicians, and all the stakeholders who are involved in creating great schools. In addition to that, I was an educator for more than a decade working with students and teachers out of the classroom, and I'm involved in a number of different organizations nationally as far as looking at school design and education, and in addition, oversee a blog called Think Lab that looks at this merger of education, technology, and school design as well.
Okay, well, welcome, Christian, and thanks for giving up your time, man. If you could get, let's kick off with a really broad question. What defines a good learning environment?
It's probably as good a question as you could ask, DK, and what comes to mind immediately is if you can see learning taking place, it's a great learning environment. And I say that first and foremost because great learning in the future doesn't necessarily look like what acceptable learning did in the past. And it's moving much, much more towards a learner-based experience, a hands-on and authentic, an engaged process where there's tangible results that are, in addition to being seen in a testing or assessment process, are seen in very practical ways as well. And so a great learning environment, no matter how it was designed, first and foremost, has to show learners engaged and active.
So tell us about how designers of today, you know, the architects, are creating these future learning environments and have been influenced then by the changes in technologies and attitudes and lifestyles of the young people. And if you could give us a few examples.
Sure. No, I'd be happy to. I believe that designers and architects, engineers, all the folks involved in the design and construction of schools are trying to juggle two different pressures and two different opportunities. On one hand, there are architectural and practical building issues at hand. And from that camp, some of the trends that you're seeing are obviously green or sustainable architecture and design. And that can run and be fairly simple and straightforward in terms of daylighting, in terms of indoor air quality, in terms of making certain that the school environment is healthy, and it's also taking full advantage of the building system technologies that are in place now. And a lot of discussion, and it can also move up the chart in terms of looking at schools as three-dimensional textbooks, where the actual building systems, the AC, the rainwater runoff, et cetera, can be woven into the curriculum or into the learning process. So that when a student looks at a building system, not only does it function, but it also teaches them something about physics, about engineering, about mathematics, about the environment, et cetera. On the other hand, it's going to be in terms of what the learning experience is like and what the community experience is like. And so designers are having to wrestle with issues of how large a school allows a community to be fostered, allows relationships to be enhanced, and allows kids to be empowered and engaged. So the small learning movement or the small learning community, small schools movement, et cetera, certainly has given a lot of attention globally. And in some parts of the world, they do small schools naturally because it's always at the scale of the community. But in a lot of modern communities and a lot of modern societies are faced with having larger and larger high schools or larger and larger schools and trying to then backward design to smaller learning communities on one large campus. And then the final piece is trying to understand how technology, one-to-one laptop initiatives, wireless versus hard wiring, trying to understand in terms of security issues, safety issues, multimedia, etc. How do you actually create a school that has an appropriate level of technology that doesn't bankrupt the school but empowers the students and teachers to be forward-thinking, if you would, and forward-acting, if you will.
And has there been a trend in the last couple of years of more participatory kind of a process then in building, the school building design and process, and in other words, embracing young people's views and expectations rather than just consulting? Has there been a trend move towards that?
I'd like to say, DK, that good people are working very hard at that throughout the world, and that very confident designers who understand the critical nature of involving the community and involving every kid and teacher, et cetera, as well as that learning has to be at the center of the discussion, not just building and architecture. They do it intuitively. And I'd also have to say that the majority of firms, either because of time or because of maybe the process that's typically in place, those participatory moments still tend to be more press release oriented and more a marketing orientation. So it's great for a photo op to get a group of kids around a table and ask them to sketch what they dream of school. But typically that's a value added part of the process and it's not seen as fundamental. But again, I'll stress that there are great people everywhere that are working very hard to bring students, teachers, parents, community members together, and I've been fortunate to be part of a number of those conversations, so I certainly see them happening. I just hope that more and more of the design community continues to believe in that side of things.
And there's obviously a big question to be asked around architectural and designers in terms of ensuring what they build, the schools they build, you know, which will last for decades and decades, how fluid they will be and have the potential to kind of encapsulate future changes. How do kind of designers and architects kind of treat those big questions?
Sure. No, it's a great question. And flexibility is so critical in terms of making sure that these buildings are relevant. So you have an investment issue. You've got to make certain that building can still do what it was charged to do. You want to make sure that it stands and that it's a healthy environment, and that the folks who maintain it can continue to maintain it well. So those are very practical needs that are always in play when a school or a campus is designed and built. Within that, in terms of flexibility, you've got the exterior envelope, or the what the building looks like from the outside, if you will, and then you have the internal walls and the internal hallways and internal classrooms and spaces. And so flexibility for a lot of architects has to do with how permanent those interior walls are. And that can be, you know, from one hand, it can be the walls are movable, they're flexible, they literally peel back and go back in, and spaces are small and become large. It can have to do with transparency and whether or not you can see through walls and have a feeling of connection with smaller and larger spaces. It has to do with adjacencies and whether or not classrooms and more public learning spaces are oriented closer to each other so that teachers and students can gravitate to the spaces they need in a just-in-time manner. It also has to do with, frankly, can you tear down a wall quickly and rebuild it when your population changes or your learning space needs change? So often flexibility has to do with walls that are certainly very honorable but can be torn down in the summer and rebuilt in another manner. And then you have to look at building systems, technology, lighting, you know, the air conditioning, all of those things and how they're designed, pre-planned in so that flexibility is available. I think you're asking maybe a deeper question in terms of flexibility of what does a classroom look like today versus what it may look like in the future. And I think generally my experience is that most design projects and design teams start with the larger campus and work in, start with the building and work in, start with the wing and move in. And so at the end of the day, the single unit of learning, the classroom, if you will, is for the most part still a box. It's still a rectangle. It's still a fairly general space that can be flexible in the sense that a math teacher can use it one year, an English or history teacher can use it the next, but it still does classroom the way they believe it has to happen year after year. So there are folks who look at flexibility in terms of just numbers of students, and other folks that look at flexibility that what we mean by a school is going to be something profoundly different 10 years from now. And so I think it's a matter of which side of that table you're on when you answer that question.
And I was going to ask you, just to wrap this interview up, kind of Design Share has a strapline, designing for the future of learning. What do you think the future of learning will look like then, it, not just tangibly but also kind of in the discourse that surrounds then? What are the big issues?
Sure. And I will say, first and foremost, the answer is not technology-based. And what I mean by that is it's tempting to say it's about laptops or it's about seamless integration of, you know, every possible stream of information. And while all of those things are critical, those are the tactics. Those aren't the strategies, if you will. And the greater strategy has more to do with what do we mean by learning and what do we mean by co-creation and what do we mean by information being available 24/7 When that no longer is interesting, what are we actually going to do? And so for the next couple of years, the answer is going to be getting laptops and getting handhelds and getting, you know, smart technologies into rooms and into classrooms and libraries and powering kids up. But at a certain point in time, it's going to be available everywhere, and we're no longer going to be impressed that Wikipedia and Google exist. So I'm much more curious 5 or 10 years out, when all of that is just seen as common sense, are people going to be fundamentally teaching and learning in a different way? My investment is that they will. But I still believe, for the most part, people are still geeked out, if you will, by a new tool and a new technology, a new piece of software, and they're not fundamentally changing what they mean by learning. It's still about PowerPoint, not about audience. It's still about whether or not you can Google, as opposed to can you evaluate the source. And so I think at some point in time in the new future, we're going to have to shift from the tool and the curriculum and the software to what do you do when everything's available to you free all the time.
Okay. Wow, that's brilliant. Well, I'd just like to thank you for giving up your time, Christian, to speak to Media Snackers. It's been great.
Appreciate it, DK. Thank you.
You're listening to a Media Snackers podcast. Check us out at mediasnackers.com.